Welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue. And, yeah, we're here till 5 o'clock. And Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. My guest coming up here is a columnist. He is a ghostwriter of over 550 books, 18 of which are national bestsellers. He writes regularly for the New York Daily News and the Huffington Post, and he's got an incredible story. He writes some really great columns, and the ghostwriting thing is a fascinating thing, and I want to get into that. His website is businessghost.com. And let's welcome to the show to talk about some of his recent columns and what really ghostwriting is, and the company that that helps people produce books that he has. And his name is Michael Levin. Let's welcome Michael to the show. Michael, welcome to the show, sir.
Nick, thank you for having me on.
And it's my pleasure. Before we get started, I want to talk to you about your business and how you got started in writing, and I want to talk about some of the columns that you've written recently. You just ran the Boston Marathon recently.
Yes, that's true.
And wasn't pleasant weather-wise at all. I must have been. Was how difficult was it?
It was. Gosh, I don't want to overstate the case, but I've done close to 40 distance races in the last 15 years: marathons, half marathons, and triathlons. And this is by far the worst weather I've ever been in.
I mean, I saw footage. I saw footage of it, and I just felt for everybody who was out there. And we've had terrible weather here in Chicago, but the East Coast has just been getting slammed.
Yeah, and I'm 59 years old. I've got no speed, so let's just say I've had more pleasant days, but I'm just grateful it's behind me, and life goes on.
I'm glad you survived so that we could speak this morning.
Yes.
How did you get into to writing in general? And then I want to talk about ghostwriting because I think a lot of people have misconceptions about it. But how did you get into writing?
You know, it's my only marketable skill. It's the thing I've always wanted to do since my father read me Ask Mr. Bear, Winnie the Pooh when I was 3 or 4 years old. I love books. I love writing. And I did my first opinion piece for the New York Times when I had just graduated college that summer. That led to a job at CBS News, and I was kind of off and running, and I've been writing and publishing, fortunately, ever since.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Boy, that must have been something right out of college, having something published in the New York Times.
It was like being hit by lightning.
Yeah.
I grew up on Long Island, so every night, they said it's going to run one of these, one day this week. So every night around 10:30, I'd drive into New York, I'd park in Times Square. That tells you how long it is, though, that you could actually find a parking space in Times Square. and look for the paper when it was, dumped off at the newsstand at 11:30 at night for
right,
the next morning.
Right.
And then one day, boom, it was there. And I'll tell you something, that was probably the single most intoxicating moment of my life, seeing my stuff, seeing my name and my work in the Times. And it just sort of... they say once you get printer's ink in your blood, it never goes out.
Yeah.
And that's how it's been for me all these years.
That's well. So. Well, congratulations. That's a great story, man. And I just love that now it's so quaint that you drove in to get the newspaper,
I know. It's like every time I hold a newspaper in my hands, which is really not all that often, like most people, I get most of my news online.
Yeah.
I feel as though I'm having this, partly nostalgic moment, but also the sense of why are these people telling me what I should read and in what order?
Yeah.
Because the internet gives you so much freedom to bounce from source to source, story to story. So, you look at what's online and say, you look at a newspaper and say, why are they telling me that that's more important than that? I want to read,
Yeah.
My own nonsense.
It's funny though, because I have had a couple of similar experiences. I used to direct theater here in Chicago and wrote some plays and stuff. And the Tribune came out, and this was a big deal because we were a very small company at that time. The Chicago Tribune would not come out and see our shows. We only had 50 seat house, whatever.
Mm.
So one night they came out to see our show, and they loved it. And we heard that they loved it. They send out a photographer to take pictures and stuff. And this had never happened really big time in this theater company. And I remember when the review came out, I did the same thing you did. I drove downtown And I drove to this building right here that I'm in right now, the Chicago Tribune building, and I waited until they delivered the paper, and then I got it, and I brought it back, and everybody was at a bar, and I brought it back to the bar, and we read the review, and it was a rave, and we had a great night. But that's just, it's so funny that that's, you know, how we used to get our news, so.
Yeah, the world has changed.
Yeah, absolutely.
The world has changed a lot.
Absolutely. So. Listen, before we get into some of the columns that you've written recently, tell everybody what ghostwriting is. I think people have a misconception about it. And you have a company that offers to help produce books for people. And they can get the information at businessghost.com. But tell everybody what ghostwriting is.
Sure. Basically, you have the ideas, but you don't have the time to put them down on paper. Or you're too busy to, or you don't like writing. So we come in and we sort of facilitate. So we listen to you. We interview you. We want to see who you are in the world, who you want to be perceived as next. And then we basically write the book. It sounds like you. It's based on interviews with you. And the idea is that if anybody reads it, they would never think you had help. And you might say, well, if somebody helped me write it, is it still my book? Now, I have a lawn. I don't mow my lawn, but it's still my lawn.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if somebody drives by the house, they go, oh, that's a nice lawn. Well, okay, I didn't do much with it because I don't like doing that. But it's the same basic idea. It's your ideas expressed in your voice in book form. And the reality is it just takes too long for most people to sort of go up the learning curve and figure out how to write a book, even if they like to write, even if they have the time to write.
Yeah.
So if you, you know, some people, the positive message, business or personal, come to us, and we turn that message into a physical book, a paperback, a hardcover, an ebook, an audiobook, and we get it into Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com, and that's basically what it is.
Well, it's an incredible business idea, and I read all about it, and I love the fact that that give us 1 hour per week and become a published author in a few months or even faster, and that hour. Where you know you're speaking with someone at your company or you or a consultant, that person is basically that you're saying that could be a chapter in a book, like that hour could be a full chapter for a book.
Yeah, I mean we've done 500-600 books by now. We know how to interview, and I like to say we only work with people who are too busy to talk to us. So if your time is valuable, you don't have the time to go into these you know long overarching conversations about everything under the sun. Instead. We basically ask you, okay, Tuesday at 9 a.m., we're going to be doing chapter 3, and that's about such and such. Just do a file dump on us. Tell us everything you've ever known, thought, experienced, seen, read, heard, case studies, war stories, whatever. And then that's going to be turned into a chapter that's going to be delivered to your inbox within 2 weeks of the call. And then you're going to tell us what you liked, what you hated, so we can adjust. And it's wash, rinse, repeat through the end of the book. It's that simple.
And your company, you can go to businessghost.com, has a pretty great track record.
We're very fortunate. Yeah, we've had tons of bestsellers. You can pump books up the Amazon list, and I can, you know, and I tell my clients how to do it. But when you look at legitimate bestsellers, we've had a lot. We've had 2 books on 60 Minutes. We've had 2 New York Times bestsellers. Our work has been optioned or made by Disney, Paramount, Steven Soderbergh, ABC, HBO, Darren Star. The list goes on and on. So, you know, we've been around for 24 years. We're the real deal. We get it done, and people love us, and I'm very fortunate.
That's
so,
great, man. Now, as far as, like, the ghostwriting that you've done, you've worked with people like Dave Winfield and Pat Summerall, and what some people might not believe is that when, let's say, a celebrity or an athlete or someone releases a memoir or a book, 9 times out of 10, they don't write it. And that's where a ghostwriter comes in, a ghostwriter on your level comes in, correct?
Right. And celebrities are famous for doing what they do. They're not writers. And it's extremely rare for a celebrity, whether in sports or business or politics, to write his or her own book. It just doesn't happen because, again, they don't have the time for that. And it's not the highest and best use of their time. And that's true whether you are the former first lady or you are you're a doctor or a business owner or a consultant or anybody. It just doesn't make sense to spend all that time trying to figure it out yourself. And that's especially true. With our celebrity and sports figure clientele.
Yeah. And but again, as you said, it doesn't mean it's not their book because it is.
Well, it's their ideas expressed in their words. The only thing that's missing, if you will, is that they didn't sit there and put pen to paper. But who cares? And because if they had to, the book would never come out. They don't have the time or the inclination or maybe the education.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing is that it's almost impossible for anybody to be dispassionate or objective about their own intellectual property or what they've done with their lives. And it just helps to have somebody step in and say, that's really interesting. Let's focus on that. And, you know, Dave Winfield gave me about 100. We had lunch and he liked me. I liked him. He gave me about 100 pages of material to read. And I read it. And I called him 2 days later. And I said, you know, I'm not quite sure that's the best way to go. Instead, what if you did the book this way and we organized it this way and we called it that? And there's this long, long pause while he's digesting the information, long enough for me to say to myself, wow, I nearly had the opportunity to work with Dave Winfield. And then all of a sudden he says, that's good. I like that. And, you know, 5 words that changed my life.
There
we're
you
off
go.
And running.
It's amazing. Well, congratulations on your success, man. Businessghost.com. And you said you've not stopped writing. You have columns in the New York Daily News and the Huffington Post, and people can get to your columns. It's three recent columns that I want to talk to you about when we come back after this break. Okay, Michael, hang on.
Yep.
Okay. Michael Levin is with us. He is a columnist, a ghostwriter. His business is businessghost.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about some articles that he's written, some columns he's written that are of great interest. And that's coming up right after we take this break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everyone. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue. And we are talking with Michael Levin. He is a columnist. He's a ghostwriter of over 550 books. He's got an incredibly successful business for ghostwriting, businessghost.com, for more information. And he's also written some great columns that we want to talk about. Let's welcome Michael back to the show. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
I really was stunned and amazed by the story about your great uncle. You wrote the story in honor of Holocaust Remembrance Day last week, and it's an incredible story, an absolutely incredible story. Tell everybody about your uncle.
Oh, sure, and thank you for the kind words, Nick.
Yeah.
He's 96 years old. He's still alive. I just saw him a couple of weeks ago. He lives in a retirement home outside of Tel Aviv. In 1939, he could have escaped the Holocaust. He's Jewish, and we are, and he could have escaped the Holocaust with his brother and his sister-in-law and my mom, who was 4 years old. They started running. This was in Belgium in 1939, month after the war begins, and instead he's about 17, 18 years old. He goes into the resistance in the south of France, and to prove himself, he has to shoot a Nazi prisoner in the head. To prove his bona fides to the resistance, that he's the real deal. Well, you know, apparently he goes ahead and does that. I never knew that until a few years ago. And then he spends the next few years until 1942 either rowing Jews across Lake Geneva to safety or, putting them on skis or basically sort of carrying them and skiing them over the mountains into Switzerland. He's caught by the French police repeatedly. He always manages to escape. One time he told me he jumped off the back of a truck at a switchback and rolled to safety. Finally, a French farmer turned him into the Nazis, and the Nazis put him in one concentration camp after the next. He took me to Yad Vashem 30 years ago, and he pointed to the map on the floor with Europe with all the concentration camps. He said, first they took me there, then they took me there, then they took me there. His final stop was Buchenwald, and there was a forced march of 1,400 prisoners. Only four survived. He was one of them. And when he came out, he had absolutely nothing. He ended up becoming one of the leading diamond dealers in Europe. He set up the diamond trade in Israel, was one of the founders of the industry in the 1960s. In Lebanon, he said he would sell diamonds in the morning, water ski in the afternoon, and God knows what he would do at night. He was a ladies' man like you cannot imagine. He was the real James Bond. And he was connected. For a guy with no education and no background, he became friends with the top authors, diplomats, journalists, movie stars, business leaders in the world. They all loved him because he has just the most magnetic personality. And, being with him, I got to ski with him most years in my 20s and 30s. It was just like you just felt like you were a Kennedy, just to be, associated with him or to be part of his family. Yeah. So that's sort of the basics of the story.
Well, and it also, upon writing this, as I read it, it's a very reflective piece about you as well, about how it affected you.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I mean, the first time I met him, I was 10 years old. He was going to the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City, and I couldn't figure out if he was going as a spectator or a competitor.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, the guy was a distance athlete before they had invented the term. When I was a teenager, I would go to Belgium, and, you know, there's a little town called Canuck, and, you know, on the water, and this is, you know, the freezing English Channel, whatever it's called up there, and you know, he would go out there in this freezing water and just swim incredibly long distances, and until he was like a speck on the horizon, and then turn around. I mean, if the Nazis couldn't kill him, the water couldn't. And that really ultimately inspired me to go into the distance racing that I've done for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, just knowing someone like that, in one way, it's almost a burden, because you sit there and you look at him and you go, what on earth can I do with my life that could possibly have the meaning that his has had? And I really don't think I've ever, in that sense, lived up to him. But at the same time, he's 96, as sharp as a tack. He knows who I am. He's proud of me. He knows what I've done in terms of books, and he's you know, someone who loves books. He's very proud of what I've accomplished. So, you know, it's given my life direction and a sense of meaning and connection just to have known him all these years, and to know that that there are real heroes out there, and to have been influenced so deeply by one. Yeah. Has been huge for me.
No, it's an amazing piece. It's a beautiful piece, man. And he's the subject of a, you mentioned in the piece that he's the subject of a 2006 biography called Won't Forgive, Can't Forget.
That's right. And one of his best friends did it. That's where I learned the story about him shooting the Nazi prisoner. I'd never known that. And, you know, there's some things that you just can't bring yourself to say. And then, you know, every year he'd tell me another story or two about the camps, or about the resistance, or about the diamond trade. There's one story in the family. I couldn't put it in the article because it's, you know, we just don't have any proof for it. But he was the chief price setter for diamonds for Zaire, for the whole country.
Man.
And he's competing against the syndicate that runs the worldwide diamond industry, and they hated him. And he was flying somewhere with his girlfriend at the time, and she said, "We have to get off this plane." And it took, and they got off it, and it took off from Shannon, Ireland, and sure enough, it blew up in midair. Is it because they were trying to kill him? Possibly, you know. But it's just one of those things you cannot document. But,
yeah.
Wow. You know, he's a walking movie. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's great. I wanted to mention before we let you go, you kind of get sucked down a wormhole in a piece that you wrote about watching reruns of What's My Line, Michael.
Yep.
I can't tell you how I identify with this. I love watching the old panel shows. They're my favorite. We have a channel here in Chicago called Buzzer. And every morning when I get home from work, they do the black and white block. And every morning I watch What's My Line. And I particularly love What's My... I like all the old black and white panel shows, but I particularly love What's My Line mostly because of John Daly. I think John Daly is just the best. And the way you describe it and talk about, you know, the celebrities that were on, and make these great observations about how shocked they are that women have certain occupations, and how all the men rise when the guest walks past them and shakes hands, and the women always wear, you know, are sitting and they're wearing gowns and tuxedos. Everything you wrote about this is exactly what goes through my mind when I watch every episode of What's My Line. I love it.
Yeah, I don't know how I stumbled onto it on YouTube, but I can't stop watching it. Now my whole family does, and you know, you're looking at a lost world.
Yeah.
That's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Where celebrities were elegant, and there was a real gap. Celebrity wasn't trying to say, "Hey, I'm like you. I wear jeans. I'm normal." You know, they didn't pretend
right to
be anything like your world. And they would sort of peer with curiosity at people who worked for a living, and you could sort of see their palpable sense of relief that they didn't have to.
Right.
You're right. John Daly is amazing. The guy can. I think he was a newscaster as well. And he gets into these incredibly verbose explanations of why the answer is yes and why the answer is no, and the panel's just as baffled as the audience. And you know, and then you see the star, you know, you see Lucille Ball, or you see Buddy Hackett, or you see Jack Lemmon, or all these people. So it's just such a wonderful trip down memory lane.
It is. And I particularly, you know, the celebrity stuff is really funny because they always have to put on the fake voices because they inevitably know the panel, you know. But no, it's just, I love the piece that you wrote because it echoes everything I feel when I watch those panel shows. There's nothing like it. The old panel shows are the best. And again, John Daly is my favorite host of any of those shows. I think he's the best.
Yeah, the funny thing is that he's got this, I don't know if it's a real accent, but they all have this sort of affected, slightly British accent, and you know, they're all trying to sound more important than God, and half the time they do, and then, you know, somebody will come on the show, one of the people they have to guess their career of, and he'll come on and he'll be they'll say, oh, you're from New York. You're a neighbor. Well, as if these celebrities are ever going to come over in their gowns and tuxedos and borrow a cup of sugar from some guy who, you know, operates a skirt blowing machine in Brooklyn. You know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, great piece, man. So people can find links to those pieces at businessghost.com. If you're interested in thinking about writing something, go to businessghost.com. It's terrific to have you on, Michael. I really enjoy your work, and I wish you the best of luck.
Nick, it's so nice of you to have me on. You're a great interviewer. Thank you for taking the time.
Oh, thanks, man. All right, have a great morning. Take care.
You too.
Michael Levin, everybody. All right, we'll take a break on 720 WGN.